All right, we're live here from the Minnesota Muskie Expo, and we're broadcasting live on Facebook, too. So if you're hearing this on Wednesday, you can go back and watch the video. Hopefully, Brad and I solved our audio problem for Milwaukee. Brad, it's been a pretty good turnout for day one here in Minnesota. I'm extremely impressed with the weather, first of all, and then the crowd because of the weather.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the neat things is this is one of the first years for the Minnesota show that we haven't had bad weather, ice, snow, the whole works. So beautiful outside, people showed up.
Yeah, and it looks like we probably have our biggest crowd of the season. Must be Minnesotans. They really like to come out for the Backlash podcast on a Friday night because there's got to be at least 8 people here, which is our entire listening audience. So that's fantastic. And on top of that, we have a really great group of guides here. We'll just pass it around here. They can introduce themselves. I think most or all of them have been on our podcast before. And, you know, we're kind of getting a little different perspective because we're in Minnesota. So we're going to talk to some Minnesota guides. We got a Wisconsin outlier over here. Darn it. Northern Wisconsin guys, they got to sneak in on us. But that's what we got going on.
He's thinking about leaving now, Jeff, that you said that.
Yeah, we got to have one. I got to have one friendly person around with me. I feel alone if I have no Wisconsin people around me. So, all right, let's dial it up. We'll go over to Phil Bob. Oh, wait, no, it's just Bob. All right, I got
just,
it right this
just
time.
Just Bob this time. Yeah. Yeah, I'm Bob Weeks, live on Leech Lake and get a chance to spend, I live there year round, but, you know, obviously all muskie season up on Leech.
I am Jerome Wadachek from Northern Wisconsin, Hinterland Muskie Guides, and we fish the Oneida, Vilas County area, sometimes in Price, but mainly in Oneida and Vilas County.
What?
Phil Bowerly, Leech Lake, and surrounding waters.
Hey, Ryan McMahon. Fish all over Minnesota, I guess. Detroit Lakes, Twin Cities metro area, Leech Lake. I don't know. Anywhere there's muskies.
Hi, Matt Seifert. Fish mostly Leech and surrounding area, I guess. So, hi, everybody.
And we officially learned that Matt owes us money for every guide trip booked off of this podcast. So, if you book a trip with Matt, please make sure that you send us an email so we can collect appropriately. But so since we do have people in attendance, who is going to be the first one to step up and answer questions or ask questions? Anybody? Who is the lucky person that's going to come up first? We got to have somebody.
Awesome question. So new enough to this, and my question is, a lot of the stuff we fish right where I live is shallow, stained. What's your seasonal approach to a deep, clear Cisco-based lake, irrespective of moving around to other bodies of water, but you're parked on one deep, clear lake for the year? Could you walk me through that season?
I can.
Deep, clear body of water, seasonal transition, how you approach it from the beginning to the end.
All right. I got to go first. I like to go last. Work. Okay. Well, caught me on deep, clear Cisco based. All right. Well, opening, obviously going to check shallows for spawning fish, but then once the progression of mayfly hatch and open water, you stay in the open with all the new electronics nowadays too. You keep tabs on them with live scope and side imaging. Yeah. Just watch where the Ciscos are going. Check the weeds, kind of the same as any other lake, but with the large Cisco base, definitely be checking open water a bit more.
To what Matt said.
That's why you want to go last.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I fish a lot of clear water and a lot of lakes that maybe have more of a like mixed forage base, you know, so there are some tuilabies, but it maybe isn't always the primary forage base. So I'm always checking the basins and seeing if you know, tuilabies are balled up and stuff like that. If they are, I'll fish those areas, you know, in open water in June, July, stuff like that. I'm really waiting though for that late summer, early fall when fish kind of come home to roost on the spots. And I'm checking outside weed edges, right in the weeds, up on top of flats, inside edges, stuff like that. I mean, that's usually when that water kind of drops down below 72 and down through the 60s. So, yep.
All right. For me, I'm out every day doing multi-species before the season, typically before the musky season. So we're running around. I mark a lot of bait fish, Ciscos and whitefish, just running around on step, on plane. You can eliminate a lot of the system just by looking at your electronics when you're running around 20, 30, 40 miles an hour. You can, if you run over a bunch of bait at that speed, you'll probably see it if you're paying attention. So that's probably my number one advice, is just watch your electronics even when you're going fast.
Yeah. So I'm from Northern Wisconsin, Jerome Wadachuk here. So we have some of those Cisco-based lakes, not a ton. So I'll just speak of a couple ones that we do. And some of the things I do in summer on those is like you guys are saying is I don't really target those till, you know, later June, July timeframe. Once you target those, one thing I look for is that thermal cline, wherever that develops. You know, I'll fish the Ciscos, like try to do some open water bite, but also I'll transition into fishing those humps that are topping out right where that thermocline may be, you know, set up. Because it's just that open water basin, as those fish are swimming around, they come to that thermocline, and that those humps will top out just over that thermocline, and they'll kind of hold some of those fish. Otherwise, other parts of the year, there might not be anything on those humps. That's kind of a something I look for in northern Wisconsin area.
Thinking about, you know, being the guy to go last here, I guess the one thing that I would say is I think about the seasonal transitions on a Cisco-based lake. You know, Leech, where I live, has a lot of perch in it as well. So for me, it's more about, I'm thinking after opener, fish are going to be in open water. You're fishing for fish where they're eating. And then at some point, you kind of get into July and you start to see fish transition shallower. And then, so for me, if I'm fishing more of an open water fish then, those I'm still fishing where they're eating versus if I am starting to fish that are setting up on structure, I'm thinking more about how I'm fishing fish that are resting or digesting their food. So then I start thinking about faster moving baits and getting reaction strikes. So to me, I guess the big thing that I would think about that maybe we haven't talked about is just knowing if I'm fishing where I think they're eating versus if I think I'm fishing from where I think they're digesting or resting, and how I approach, how I, you know, whether it's retrieve speed or baits I fish or those kinds of things, I think can make a big difference on getting bites at one time of the year versus another on those Cisco-based deeper lakes.
All right. Who's up next? Next question. Anyone? I know you got it. See?
Okay. So I had a text in question. What would your first tactic be in dirty water reservoir setting with a heavy shad population?
I didn't listen to the question good enough.
Yeah, right. I'm the cameraman. What was the question?
Dirty water with a heavy shad population.
Is there a time of year?
No.
Okay. Now? Okay. So pre-spawn, dirty water, shad-based reservoir. First thing I'm checking is up shallow. I'm going to look for rockier banks. If it's got a river channel, I know a lot of reservoirs have river channels generally. First place I'm looking starting off the year in pre-spawn is where that river channel swings and hits that bank. And especially if there's a river channel that swings and hits the bank, and then there's a nice subtle mud flat or a sand flat right beside it, because the fish are going to stay in that river channel all winter. And then as soon as we start getting some sunny days, those fish are going to pull up on the rocks on the deep bank. And then maybe a week later after some more sun, they're going to slide right over to that real shallow flat. If there's bait there, that's a huge key, but there doesn't always have to be bait there. When it's pre-spawn, those fish, they're not going there to eat. They're going to go there to get ready for the spawn. So bait's not a huge thing. If bait's there, it is good, but you want to look at for those river channel swings hitting that bank and then a shallow flat right beside it. And watch those water temps. The warmer the water temp gets, or if it's really sunny day, definitely check up really shallow on those flats, because those fish will be in like a foot of water, just getting real warm a lot. Very similar to what Minnesota fish do in like September. Our fish are doing it for basically the same reason, to get warm in that water clarity. If it's muddy, they're generally shallower. That's kind of how, if I go to a lake I've never been to, if it's clear, I'm usually trying to find them a little deeper. If it's shallower, the fish are generally, or if it's muddier, the fish are generally shallower. Don't know why that is. That's just how they are. I think they're more comfortable up in shallow water in the mud, and then in clear water, they can see a lot farther, so they can stay a little deeper, even if the water's warm. So keep that in mind, but definitely those deeper banks that are really close to a shallow flat.
Anybody else want to talk about shad?
It's a mic drop right there.
that was a mic drop for sure.
I like reservoirs.
Nobody wants to follow up Chase on that one? Okay, yeah, I got that. I got that question. Okay, it's a long one, but I'll try to simplify it a little bit. So Steve wants to know, obviously, this is more like a multiple choice thing. So we are obviously very ahead of schedule for the season so far, but things can change. But let's assume we continue this pattern. Are the fish going to be doing their normal things that they would always do? Or would it be B? What do we got for B? I can't remember. And I think B was like, so is it going to be A, normal, because it's a seasonal thing and not necessarily a water temperature thing? are they going to, is everything going to be way ahead, which would be B, or C, are we just screwed and now we're going to have to spend countless hours trying to figure out a new pattern? So you can answer it in A, B, or C, if in fact you could make it all the way through my rambling, incoherent response.
Go to the bottom.
All right, Steve, I don't know if I'm going to give you an A, B, or C here. I'll just kind of tell you what I think personally. On one hand, I think it's a little too early to tell. But on the other hand, you know, there's no snow on the ice, so there's sunlight. And I think that will make a big difference on the weed growth early on. But the big thing for me, like thinking about living in northern Minnesota, is going to be water levels. And just to see how that plays out throughout the year, whether we get a lot of rain or whatever. I think, you know, overall, a little bit too early to tell exactly how it's going to pan out. But just seeing how some of the small lakes are around me versus what Leech looks like right now, water level is going to be kind of the thing that I take a look at. And I think there can be a lot of positive bites with a low water year. I think there could be some challenges with a low water year as well. And that would be, I guess, the number one thing that I'll be paying attention to.
Yeah, you touched on most of the stuff I was going to talk about. But like one of the biggest things that I think, if this progression stays and nothing really changes, we don't get a colder spring, if everything kind of stays kosher, I think we're definitely going to see an increase in weed growth and a lot of it, that kind of conditions on a lot of the lakes. With low level, not a whole lot of influx, we're probably going to see a lot of clear water on some of your little bit stained or dirtier systems. They're just going to be super clear to start the year. With those factors, you know, the water temperature might be ahead of schedule. That's to see, depending on how the temperatures go. But like those fish, you know, they're keyed on water temperatures for the spawning and that whole sequence. But they're also keyed in on the duration of the day. That's your sun, the amount of sunlight they see on a day. So that's also going to play. So they're not going to be like, you know, in a month here when the water temperatures are skyrocketing because it's a really warm year, they're not going to just move up to the spawn because that duration of the day still knows that, oh, I should be doing that next month, you know? So all those factors come into play. So it might be a little bit ahead, but I don't know if it's going to be that far ahead that this weather pattern is kind of, everybody's thinking it's going to happen that way.
Yeah, Phil Bowerly, I think it's too soon to tell. I think what happens in May, June, July is going to determine our patterns for May, June, July, well, June, July. And like was stated, the photo period, the length of the days, keys a lot of the activity, the whole food chain. So yeah, I think it's too soon to tell. It's a good sign, I think, that things might warm up early, but we will have to wait and see here.
So I kind of forget the ABC options. Never been good with multiple choice, I guess, but I D, all of the above. No, I feel like in my memory's telling me that like warmer years, earlier ice out, usually the fish have been more patternable. I feel like they stick together. They pack up a little bit better on those years. We're in uncharted waters. This is an unprecedented early ice out. So I'm not sure what we're going to see. There's a lot of time for that water to go up and down here in the next couple months before we're even casting for muskies around Minnesota. So I would expect to see, you know, a pretty good opener. I think fish are going to be ready to bite by then, but who knows? Hopefully they're sticking together, they're packed up, and you can pattern them this year. That'd be best case scenario.
Yeah, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Say it stays warm. Historically, even if it doesn't stay warm, earlier ice outs are better fishing years for me. I think most of these guys could probably agree with that. I don't know. I'm seeing some head nods for yes. So we're going to go with yes. 2012, I remember, was record ice out for Minnesota of all time, and we're going to beat that this year. So 2012 was my best year musky fishing ever by far. But there's a few things, let's say. So I'm going to play devil's advocate on the early ice out. The mayflies haven't hatched good in 5 years. Leech had a good one 4 years ago, but mayflies live on the bottom for 5 to 7 years, and we're reaching the end of their lifespan. So I'm assuming this year is going to be a good thing. We'll see. But I think open water fishing is going to be awesome starting right away if it stays warm and continue on. Summer peak. I think you just look at it like if it stays warm, just it's kind of the same thing. But calendar usually rules by muskies usually do the same thing by the calendar every year. But the last 5 years, the calendar has pushed back about a week and a half. And I think this year it'll go back to normal. We can see summer peak, I think mid-July, I'm hoping. But I'm being very optimistic. We'll see what happens. But yeah, that's my thoughts, I guess, on it. But I'm hoping it stays warm and it's an awesome year.
All right, next question. Somebody from the crowd have a question? Anyone over here? It's like we got at least two of them now, so that's good.
So on a week-long fishing trip, how do you combat
constant weather changes, cold fronts, you know, fall period time, you know, where do you go? What do you throw? You know, that kind of thing.
What you say fall, what time of fall? Yeah. We talking?
End of September, early October.
End of September, beginning of October.
Make it easier. So we started the trip wearing t-shirts and shorts. Midweek, we started the trip wearing t-shirts and shorts. And midweek, the weather completely changed and we had to wear bibs, coats, hats, gloves. I mean, what do you do in that huge transition?
Nick, go to the bar. Good question. That's a good question. Yes, yes. That's pretty much what I did. Yeah. That was a good question, by the way. That's a tough time of year too. A lot of things happening. You mean you're not turnover yet, but that's the shallow fish push shallow in September and it feed bags crazy. It's awesome fishing. It's usually the best fishing of the year. And then it starts to transition. So there's a lot of things to think about on that one. And if you don't know the lake, I don't even know if we're going to go there on this question, a new lake. But if it's a new lake you've never been to, then you got to try everything, obviously. If you know the lake, definitely just try all your spots. You got to fish everything that time of year. You got to fish in a foot of water. You got to fish in 30 feet of water. So that's, I guess, I'll let these guys keep going. But yeah, that's a tough time of year for sure.
Yeah, I agree with Matt. That can be a tricky time of year. You know, the term, you know, turnover, you know, some lakes will turn over real hard, some won't. But even if they don't, a lot of times you just get a transition period. A lot of times I'm coming off of like my favorite time of the year where we're catching a lot of fish on bucktails, topwaters, stuff like that. More like, you know, aggressive, you know, lineal retrieves and figure eight stuff. I mean, just juiced up fish. That might be time to slow down and go to like your pull pause baits, glide baits, rubber tubes, just stuff that's going to be a little bit more erratic, a little bit slower, takes longer to get from the end of the cast back to the boat. Maybe dig a little bit deeper in the tackle box and, like Matt said, fish in 1 foot of water, fish deep, fish everywhere in between. See if you can scratch something out.
Yeah, so for me, anytime after maybe the new moon in August, if there's a cold front, I'm always going to check shallow water first. Super shallow, probably reeds, sand, shallow rocks, doesn't matter. The first thing I'm going to do is check all the shallow water I can. That's not happening. Yeah, it can be a tricky time of year. Deep weed edges have been probably the most consistent thing for me from the middle of September through October when the bite's tough. If we can make contact with deep weed edges with rubber and things like that, that's our number one way to get bites in that kind of conditions. The other thing is just pay attention. I fish big water, so we're paying attention to moving water if we can. If it was warm and then it cooled off, you probably did get a wind switch. But that sometimes those northwest winds can stack them up somewhere pretty good in the fall. So I'm looking for current seams where there's moving water that meets still water. And that can be good. That's another place to check that time of year.
Yeah, Jerome Wadachick here. That's a good question. Like, with one of the things that these guys didn't touch on, you know, everything they said is perfect and it kind of covers a lot of things. But one thing that I'll incorporate in that time of year is those fish were up shallow and are going to start transitioning off that and sitting on the weeds edges is start bringing some live bait. You know, sucker rigs are a great time of the year for that, especially when they get that cold front. They don't want to chase a bait. You're up there throwing a bait and maybe a lot of times you might not even see those fish. They'll just do a super lazy follow. They'll go deep, but they might grab that sucker that's right below the boat. And that's a good way to convert, especially in that time of year. And then you kind of touched on the other topic I was going to say is current. Like up in northern Wisconsin, we got a lot of lakes that have rivers that drain into them, kind of some clean water that comes in. And those are kind of magnet areas for fish that time of year. As those lakes are starting to turn, you get those just crappy conditions out, and that current and that influx of new water kind of will draw some active fish into those areas. And they might be up super shallow, they might be off the break or just out of that current, but they'll be in that general current area. That's always a great spot to check.
I think after this question, I'm gonna like mosey into the middle, so I'm not either first or last next time. You know, So I think it's a fantastic question. And I think, like, for me, I look at it more of as a resort owner. Like, you know, guiding is one thing, but, you know, having a resort where I get people checking in every Saturday and checking out every next Saturday, right? Like, people are so fired up for the week that they've been looking forward to their whole year. And they maybe saw a weather forecast that is like, man, this week might be challenging. And they show up, they're a little on edge. They might have a few more questions. I think for me, the week that you're staying is a kind of a challenging week anyway, because it can be pre-turnover, it can be turnover depending on the lake and that, and you know, how that season's progressing. So I guess I'll look at it more of like, if it's any week in the season, right? Every Saturday I get people to check into my resort and they ask me for spots. And I have no problem. Luckily, I live on a big lake, right? And I want my resort guests to catch fish. So it's kind of easy to give them some community spots and kind of give them some pointers on, you know, kind of what they're biting on type of thing. But I tell, like, and I really think about my walleye guests, you know, about this a little bit more. I tell everybody, like, hey, here's a couple ideas. But, like, spend your first day really investing in your electronics. Like, I know everybody's so excited to go out and get a line in the water, but just go cruise break lines and look for food, right? Like, if I can use my sight imaging and cruise a break line, I'm going to see the weed line. I'm going to see schools of perch. I'm going to see schools of walleyes right off those weed lines. Like, 3 hours without a bait in the water, just going at 3 miles an hour, especially if you kind of have an idea of areas to start, like, that can do so much for you. I mean, I would really, really advocate, like, you know, I know you're fired up, but, like, just look at your first day as an absolute scouting day. Like, how can I learn as much as I possibly can in my first 4 to 8 hours about what's going on in the system? And to me, I think that's a big one that a lot of people just get too impatient to do that can really pay off in a big way. I know it's a guide panel deal, but hire a guide. Honestly, like, if you weren't sure about hiring a guide and then you are getting there and you're like a few days before you get there and you see there's a big major system coming, start calling around to see if there's a guide available. Let the guide go through all the stress on that cold front day. Let them empty the tackle box. I mean, honestly, like, that's what we're there for. I know it can be a tough day of fishing, but, like, maybe take a little bit off your plate and let somebody who's on the water every single day show you how they go through that stress and how they go through trying to figure out what the fish did differently. And then another thing is deeper water. I know we've heard about some shallow stuff, and I totally agree with that. But keep in mind, deeper water is going to be affected less by a major front, right? Like, there's less of a temperature change. So if you invest in your, you know, time in your electronics, like cruising some stuff, and you happen to find some deeper weed edges or some deeper rock piles where there's a lot of life there, if there's muskies around and you're talking about a 20-foot break line versus a 4 or 5 foot break line, I can guarantee you those muskies have felt that they have not felt the impacts of that cold front nearly as much as fish that were maybe a little bit shallower.
All right. We got another one right here.
So open water now is getting more and more pressure. My question is, like, what are you guys going to do differently this year to kind of stand out? And, like, what are going to be your go-to baits this year?
Start in the middle this time.
Thank you, Brad.
All right, this is Phil. I utilize electronics in open water quite a bit, but there's plenty of days when I could fish without electronics at all. I could just grab a bank and go and start fan casting. We catch just as many muskies doing that as we do patrolling the open water throughout the season. So I think going forward, the anglers that are going to do the best are the ones that kind of have a hybrid of open water casting and trolling, and old school, just grab a bank and go hit structures, cover water. So I'm not going to change a thing there, I guess.
Where are we going now?
Go this way. Yeah. So maybe some things you could try is just, like, you know, give a plug to all the bait manufacturers and stuff and the highly pressured stuff. Maybe try something that's completely off the wall bait that, you know, these fish haven't seen for a while. That, and like you said, like, that, just take a multi-step approach, like try fan casting, troll that area that's not working, you know, maybe troll bucktails. I know a lot of people troll crankbaits and stuff out there, but troll bucktails, something a little bit different than everybody else, because to try, you know, produce a fish, especially when they've seen a ton of different baits. That's about all I got. I just don't fish that open water. In northern Wisconsin, we don't have that as much pressure on the open water as you guys do around here. So I'll leave it up to the Minnesota gang to answer that question a little more thoroughly.
I think it's a fantastic question. I think, you know, obviously the forward facing scope and the amount of open water stuff, I mean, it has a ton of conversation these days, you know, whether good or bad or whatever, it definitely has impacted the pressure that the muskies see. Honestly, fairly similar answer to Phil. I mean, I'm lucky I got 111,000 acres to work with, and, you know, I'm just going to go in the basins and do my thing. And I think we're going to catch them.
So one of the first things I'm going to try to determine is if it's, and I'm not really a troll first guy, but I feel like some years, a lot of times the warmer years, the trolling bite can be really good. So I'll probably, like, you know, start looking at areas and spread some baits out, troll around. I know like 21 was a really good trolling year for me. I didn't really stop trolling then because we didn't really have to cast. But I think once I've determined whether I want to troll or cast, a lot of times it's not like a super extensive list of baits that I catch open water fish on. A lot of it is mixing up the cadence and mixing up the retrieve a little bit. Like a couple years ago too, I was throwing like the Wolf Creek swim baits, and it was like really long, slow pulls up and then just letting them drop. And these are like 10-foot swings, right? And if you went and like ripped something real aggressively, violently, like I normally do, where I normally want to get my guys to, we just weren't getting bites. So I think trying to figure out that cadence, figure out that rhythm. There's always one guy that seems to get it figured out in the boat. And you're always like, what are you doing different? You know, like what's going on? But so yeah, I would say just try to figure out where they are in the water column, how they want to see that bait, and what the trigger is going to be. Try to feed them.
Okay. Yeah, so as far as the pressure goes with the forward-facing sonar now, everything's changed for sure. The game's changed. But open water bite for the last 5 years has been fairly slow compared to the prior 10 years. I'm hoping the warm weather changes that. But the question, far as baits goes, is we just play it by ear. We're on the water every day, so the baits will tell us, you know. But most of the time, we're, you know, if you're using forward-facing sonar, the normals, grenades, tubes, you know, the baits that get down on their face right where you want them right now. But otherwise, for me personally, I'll troll so I get a read on it, where the bug's at, where the Cisco's at, and then change baits. I troll supernatural big baits only, pretty much. So if Duff's got a new one up his sleeve, I'll call him and see if I can use that one or whatnot. But yeah, for sure, just troll for me is the answer. I think most of us feel like the more time we spend out there, but trolling is the best way to learn what's happening in the open water first. If you're into the forward-facing sonar thing and that's all you do, I mean, good luck to you. I think this year is going to be an eye-opener for a lot of people. I think a lot of trolling fish will get caught with the mayflies not hatching. And so maybe it'll get really cold and it'll be horrible again. But I think it's going to be a great year for trolling. So I'm hoping anyways, very optimistic on that. But yeah, that's as far as the baits, we won't know until it happens. But there's no baits I've seen that I'm like, I got to get that. They're all going to eat it. But, and it depends. I've been on leech the last couple of years. Went on Vermilion. It was like, they wanted the beaver. It was like the one bait they wouldn't get used to. And it went from all the rubber baits to beavers, and they're still eating them out there. It's just, and they got to be right on the surface. And then other lakes, I'm fishing deep with rubber, and it all depends. But yeah, definitely every lake's different. But I think trolling is a great tool to learn what's going on. You can figure out a lot on a lake in 2 days of trolling. To set yourself up, if you're there for a week, set yourself up for the rest of the week.
Another question?
Okay. So I'll just go to the next. So I kind of see like all ends of the spectrum in terms of leaders these days. So I see guys that are hand tying 80-pound fluorocarbon directly to it, like no swivels, no nothing. And then other guys throwing like 230-pound wire leaders on there. Like, where are you guys at? What do you think it actually makes a difference, or they're muskies and just throw it on and they'll eat it?
You're talking about for casting? Yeah, I think most of us would agree that bucktails buzz a little bit more with wire leaders. I've gone back to wire quite a bit. For a while, I was throwing 220 stealth fluorocarbons for years, but I was on Vermilion in the rocks, and I got the biggest ones he made, the 220-pound. And now I'm fishing a lot more sand and weed. So I think it all depends on the bait, too. A lot of baits work better with, I think you're going to get the same answer for most of us, but 80-pound... The 80-pound uninot is direct to your line is a great way to fish at night, like a 3-footer uninot, but you got to put 6 inches up. And that was a Greg Thomas thing, I'm pretty sure. I can't say that, but that's first place I saw it was from Greg Thomas. And he was just uninotting 80-pound fluoro 3 feet with a 6-inch steel leader, just tying his own, no swivels, nothing. Or you could put a swivel on the end if you want, but that knot going through your rod tip at night was amazing. But I wouldn't trust 80-pound fluorocarbon in a fish's mouth ever. I would put 6 inches of steel on that thing for sure.
How about these guys?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. I'm throwing solid wire and fluoro, 150, 180 pound fluoro for the most part. Yeah, solid wire, starting to see that on my bucktail rods a little bit more often. Throw a lot of baits when I'm up on like Lake of the Woods and stuff. I mean, obviously making a lot of contact with rocks and whatnot, but rubber and stuff like that, still using fluoro quite a bit and for bucktails a lot too. So nothing too crazy.
Yeah, this is Phil. Yeah, 174 pound solid wire for most of my blades these days, especially smaller ones and single blades. I think it's a lot more important for the small blades. And then 150 pound fluorocarbon at a minimum. That's pretty much the only two casting leaders I use these days. And I have gone shorter with my wire leaders, a shorter leader. I don't know. It seems like it can make a difference to run a little shorter than the 12 inches, 14 inches that we were running for a long time.
Yeah, I'm going to pretty much follow suit with all these guys. The one thing I run is just strictly wire and then the 7-strand or the 49-strand braided wire leaders. I very rarely run fluorocarbon. If I do some trolling, I'll maybe run some fluorocarbon leaders, but it's mainly the wire, solid wire. Now, the one thing that a lot of guys didn't, they talked about their bucktails and stuff, but jerk baits, it's a solid wire leader, you know, a 12 inch or a 9 inch. And then to make sure with the jerk baits, I always don't have any barrel swivels or anything on it. Just, I find a lot of better action with all that. If you just have a no BS system, you just have your wire leader, a wire or a solid metal ring, and then just your snap ring on the bait, you know, it just minimizes any type of drag on those baits and you get better action from them.
I mean, I think it's all been said. Wire with bucktails. I agree with Phil. Smaller bucktails, definitely shorter wire for me. But then I also thought about, you know, there are a few baits in my boat where I find like fish just inhale baits. And so I always tend to go with a little bit longer leaders. You know, shallow swimming dog is a bait that seems like when I get them on that, like the entire bait is gone, right? And so like a minimum of a 14 inch fluorocarbon on that one for me. Grenade is another bait that when they've eaten the grenade, like that entire bait is gone. And so a little bit longer leader, just, you know, again, for protection of the fish and making sure they don't bite it off, you know. And bulldogs, typically like late summer on leech, we can catch really big fish on, you know, regular size or magnum size bulldogs and they'll inhale the whole bait. So I always like to make sure I have a little bit longer fluorocarbon leaders when I do those.
Do you? All right.
Oh, okay.
Well, what I want to do is just talk about memorable catches from this past season. Like, what's their most memorable catch? For me, it's not always about the biggest fish. Sometimes it's just about a special fish, right? Like, I had my son caught a, I don't know, 34-incher this year, and it was his first muskie, and he's going, "Dad, I got one. Dad, I got one." So that was the coolest catch I had probably for the last couple seasons. My buddy Kyle got a 52 that we were fishing. That was cool, but I'd still rather see my son catch 34. So what did you guys have for most memorable catches this year?
Oh, that's really hard to pin it down to one. You know, I'm kind of lucky in terms of, you know, owning a resort that specializes in muskie fishing and has a muskie shop and has muskie guides that are pretty much there every day. I get a lot of people that have never fished muskies that are interested in it. And so I get a lot of first timers. So I can think of a handful of first time muskies in my boat this year, which are always super cool. I think one that comes to mind is, you know, I've got a guy that, you know, his whole family stays at the resort. You know, I think they book like 6 or 7 cabins every summer. This particular guy has been coming to the resort for 30 years. You know, so being a fourth year owner of the resort, I inherited him as a customer and he's turned into a, you know, good friend and a great customer. And he booked a muskie trip. He gave up on trying to catch muskies like 10 years ago. He spent 20 years trying to catch a muskie and never caught one. And the second spot of the day, he caught a 40 incher. And he literally, fish gets in the bag and he literally looks to the heavens and says a prayer and like literally starts crying. And he had his daughter in the boat with him. And it was just like a super cool, super cool moment where it was like, it meant so much to him. And thinking back, he lost a fish on the first spot of the day and then got one on the second spot. And so, you know, the first timers, I think for me are the ones that stick out. And that's one that comes to mind is you just never realize, you know, when you're out there doing it every day, you have fun every day. You just don't realize sometimes what it means to the person, you know, and in that case, I had no idea. I didn't get the full, I don't think I got the full story of like that he gave up, you know, and it was really cool.
Yeah. So I'm kind of follow suit on him. The first timers are definitely a lot of fish that I can think back and and vividly remember those fish for some of my bass clients that their first fish. But the one that this past year rings a bell, kind of checks off a few boxes. First fish, a special spot on the lake, and then a repeat fish. I had a client come out, called me kind of last minute, and I'm coming up and just want to go out. So I end up was actually going to be fishing on that lake personally myself that day. And I actually picked him up right on his dock, took him out a little ways, and we started fishing. He's like, well, aren't we going to go any farther? And I'm like, no, this is probably one of the best spots on the lake right from your place. He had no idea it was. And literally half an hour in, his son catches a 47 on a first fish on a sucker rig, get it in, and they were just all ecstatic. Just a super heavy northern Wisconsin fish at 47. And then as we were like pulling that fish in the boat, I noticed something unique about its tail. And I was like, I caught that fish before. And I caught that fish really close to right where we caught it. So I went back after we released the fish and got all the pictures, I went back and showed them. Sure enough, 5 years prior, I caught that exact fish in almost the exact spot, almost a few days in the month of October from when he caught it. So that was kind of cool for me to catch a fish of that caliber in the exact same spot, you know, 5 years later. And then for my client to have it as their personal best on that lake and their first fish, obviously. And his dad said they have never caught a fish that big on that lake themselves. So that was probably the most memorable one for me this last year.
All right, Phil Bowerly again. Yeah, the first thing that popped into my mind was people that had never caught a muskie before. We were fishing on a Saturday on a big tournament day. And the first couple of spots we were fishing behind a bunch of other boats that were fishing the same shoreline. And I remember commenting, they're not getting their baits up tight to the rocks. And so we were fishing basically just a boring looking rocky shoreline, but it turns from rock to sand in about 5 feet of water, not too far from shore. And we noticed that these other anglers were getting their baits maybe 20 or 30 feet from the rocks and moving along pretty quickly. So I said, well, we're going to fish right behind them. And I had these anglers throw topwaters right up and actually told them to try to hit the rocks if they can. And we ended up with a 4-fish morning, and all those fish came right out of the rock to sand transition within 10 feet of the shoreline. So that was pretty cool. And the one gal caught, I think it was a 48 or 49 inch fish, and she was probably, 80 or 90 pound gal, caught her first big muskie. And so that was a pretty memorable one.
Yeah. I mean, I'll follow suit. I love, seeing people catch their first muskie, and, we had a few of those, in the boat this year, and it was great. I got to be a little bit selfish, though. I hadn't been on Lake of the Woods for, since before that little virus was going around. So it'd been a few years, and it was kind of one of those deals where we got up and we had a couple hours to fish the first evening and got a nice, I don't know what it was. It was like, I think it was like a 49 incher, but a nice heavy one, just, right as the sun's going down, wakes up behind a Cannonball Junior and, eats halfway back to the boat. It was like one of those where you sat down and you said, all right, it's good to be back. So that one. And then also before I switch over to live bait at the end of the year, I always want to catch one on my last day casting. And I got another nice 4-footer on Forest Lake on a topwater. So it's all about me, right?
Sometimes it's good to catch one yourself. The first one, well, my favorite fish this year was when Chase Gibson caught one in the back of my boat.
Really?
No, I mean, it was cool, but it wasn't the best one. But just kidding. I had a couple that own a resort on Leech kind of adopt me into their family this year, for better or for worse for them. But yeah, it was an awesome year. And Jen, Bob's wife, who's on the podcast here, I took her out when I had some time and Bob was busy at the resort a couple times, to no avail. And one night we went out and with some clients of theirs that I took out that day, and he caught a nice one as well. And Jen caught a real nice one, and it was kind of the highlight of the year for sure for me. I was glad she caught a nice one. So they did a lot for me this year, and it was nice to pay something back if I could. So that was my favorite fish of the year.
Other than mine.
Other than yours, Chase.
All right, so let's say you're going to go troll open water, just troll around the lake to try and learn it, right? Set the tone for what the next few days is going to look like. I fish solo a lot. You only get one line. So one is, where are you running the bait? You doing a down rod, an out rod, a board? Two is, what's the bait that you're throwing out there?
Hey, I guess where this is going to go.
Oh, one rod. I mean, fishing by yourself in Minnesota trolling one rod, that's tough. I mean, for me, I think my answer is cheating a little bit because, you know, being on the water every day and being able to fish multiple lines, I'm going to be fishing board rods and, you know, rods, a down rod behind the boat. And I'm probably just going to choose what's been working the best for me. I would say for me, and I know not everybody's the same, but I would say for me, probably 80% of my fish come on board rods. And so I would probably start with one board rod. You're talking about June timeframe. I'm going to have, most likely on leech, I'm going to have a matlock on in June, and I'm going to be running it front pin 10 to 30 feet behind the board. So it's going down no more than 8 or 9 feet.
Yeah, I'm sure my answer would be a little bit different than these guys since I'm fishing northern Wisconsin lakes. And like you said, you want to try to learn the lake. So one way I would go about learning a lake, if it's smaller lake, weedier, is I would just do an outrod or a downrod with a safety pin spinner and just get up in those weeds and confine that. Because what you're trying to learn is where that weed line is. So if you're out, you know, way out of the water or way out in open water, not really defining where that weed line is, you're not really going to know if you want to go back and cast on how to follow that weed line. And if you're using a crankbait, you're going to always be in those weed points and you're going to be cleaning it off all the time. That way you can run a safety fin spinner, kind of work your way down those weed lines, you know, and that's one way of effectively catching fish that time of year is they're setting up on those weed lines and you're bumping in and out of it, learning it. And then you catch a fish there. Well, obviously they're going to be in those areas. Potentially you can go back and cast it. And then another thing to learn to put down is, you know, watch your electronics, you know, watch your side scan. Another thing is have a zero line card, you know, like a lot of lakes have pretty good contour lines, but you can map your own contour lines with those zero line cards from Hummingbird and you can get a really defined image of where those points actually jut out of those weed beds and stuff like that. So that'd be my answer.
My answer is I'm kind of a busybody in the boat when I'm trolling. So I'd probably be doing a whole bunch of different things. I'd be switching it up constantly. I'd be running 5 feet a line on a down rod, 35 feet around a line on a down rod. I'd be putting a board out, running it on a brake line. I'd be all over the place probably, unless I had some recent knowledge of what was working. It's probably what I would do is just try a whole bunch of stuff. And the spaghetti method, right? Throw a bunch of stuff at the wall until something sticks.
Yeah, I'll sort of echo what Jerome said about the spinner baits. I don't know if it was like an open water question specifically or not, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, spinner bait trolling the last few years, that's kind of an old school thing I hadn't done for a really long time. And it's been like kind of in that September, early October timeframe, it's been super productive. So don't rule that out around here. And then, yeah, I think as much as I'd like to think I wouldn't be, I think I'd be like Phil a little bit, switching stuff up. And if it was just me out in open water, I think I'd probably lean towards bigger baits just to try to get attention and, you know, maybe call them in from a little, bigger area or greater distance. But yeah, that's something, you know, that's tough because you can only get one down there. And yeah, try to vary it in the water column and get it right above the bait and see what sticks.
Yeah, as far as, I didn't know if it was open water or new lake or whatever it is, but you said new lake? Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I think whatever it takes to stay out of the weeds if you're in the weeds or whatever you need to do. I wouldn't go too fast so I could watch my electronics. And if I were doing that, I guess I would just troll around with any bait that wouldn't be stuck in the weeds, but I'd be watching my electronics for my changes. But yeah, if I'm by myself, I just put a rod back. If it's a crankbait, I'm not in the weeds. Yeah, crank back to 36 feet. And if I'm in the weeds, put a spinnerbait on. But yeah, just definitely watch your electronics for your next move. That's kind of what we all do. I know we all do that. Just drive around. And if you see something, if you're not seeing bait, move shallower, put a spinnerbait on, go in the weeds. So board or no board, I probably wouldn't put a board on just so I can, if I get in trouble on a new lake, I can quick get the rod out. So, and then the board, you don't know if you have weeds on your line, you know, watch your rod tip. And I put that rod right next to my, like right next to my throttle so I can watch it if it's fouled up or something. Cause I'm staring at my graph most of the time on a new lake looking for stuff. So, but yeah, I would fully rely on your electronics. I wouldn't be, that's going to teach you more than that bait did.
That one?
Thoughts on high pressured lakes. So in southern Minnesota, we don't have a whole lot of lakes that we can fish. So when we do get out, there are, I mean, we're bumper to bumper, boats all over the place. What kind of baits should we throw to stand out? Or are there any special things that we can do to try to catch one?
Team run it.
Yeah, new water or pressured water. That would be a lot of times just new baits. Baits that haven't been on the market long. Tweaking baits a lot of times. We'll play with our baits. I know we all do that. Cut baits apart, try something different. And then timing is maybe fish at night. Fish when the other guys aren't fishing. Get out super early in the morning. Just different times. If I'm fishing in the metro, that's kind of what I do. Try to stand out with new baits. It's kind of a bummer. You're always trying to find a new bait or tweak a bait. But yeah, that's what I'll let these guys keep going. But yeah, pressured water for sure is tweaking baits and fishing at night or super early in the morning or something.
Yeah, I think there's a lot you could say about tweaking baits and stuff, but Matt's thing about timing, I think, is so crucial. You know, I fish a lot in the Twin Cities metro area. And, you know, a lot, like the first thing is locating the fish and finding out where these fish are going to be. And then, you know, figuring out what they want. You know, we still end up catching these pressured fish on a lot of the traditional baits, bucktails, topwaters, rubber, whatever. It's not anything too crazy. There might be a little tweak to it, but I think the timing element is oftentimes overlooked. And what I mean by that, and a lot of times, is like if you have like a moon event or a light change or a weather change, anything coming like that that might spur those things into biting, don't go and blow it by hitting that fish like 45 minutes before it. Try, and sometimes you might even have to like defensively fish an area, you know, and kind of keep other boats from creeping in, and then go right to the spot on the spot, right when you think that you have the best chances of getting that fish to bite. I've also really been looking at the barometer a lot too. When you have pretty even weather, if you can find like a little drop in the barometer, that's as good as the moon a lot of times. So, but again, don't go and blow that fish. Don't go and throw baits at it five different times throughout the day and then expect it to bite, you know, on the sixth time. You know, try to let that thing get good and comfortable on its spot and then hit it right at the right time.
All right, Phil here again. Yeah, windows. Windows get shorter, so you got to get the timing right. Like they said, I'm an early bird, so I like to get out really super early on fish if I think there's a lot of pressure out. Probably the best thing you could do if you're fishing a pressured lake would maybe be, if you don't know when the window is, maybe you have to fish a really long day to figure it out. At least the first day, fish a really long day, see when the fish are active, and then you got something to go off of there. As far as baits, that mid-range, those 8-inch baits that everybody's throwing maybe aren't going to be so good. Sometimes you have to go really small or really big to get a fish's attention and get a bite when the fish are pressured. So
yeah, these guys basically stole all the good stuff, but there was one small thing that popped in my mind in Northern Wisconsin. Maybe you guys don't have it as much in Minnesota, but in some of the areas where they are highly pressured boat traffic, there's are some really good spots. And if you know there's a good spot, this will probably be really good for you, is you watch those spots, and you can't fish them when there's boat traffic. They're just boats always ripping through, but there's always the dinner time window. Everybody goes in for dinner time, you know, that 5, 6, 7 o'clock, and run to those spots, because those fish are still there close. You know, they're not going to be up in the weeds where they're getting pounded or in shallow water where the props are going around, but they'll pull off. And then they get in this pattern where then they'll slide up. They know when that kind of lull is sometimes, and they'll slide up, and you can catch those fish in that 5, 6, 7 o'clock window on those real pressured spots when that boat traffic dies down for that little window. You know, they'll come out after dark for their after dinner cruise, but there's sometimes that little window can be pretty productive for me.
You know, a couple of things that haven't been said is, you know, you might have a spot and there's like a spot on a spot, right? Well, if everybody knows about the spot on the spot, like investing time, like, you know, if I have the opportunity to fish and there's not a ton of pressure, then I can go run and gun the best parts of the spot. But if there's a ton of pressure, just slowing down a little bit and fishing the secondary spots around it that other people might miss. You know, Phil's story earlier about tournament boats not getting those casts up tight enough. I mean, it's kind of the same thing where people like fish where they've seen a fish before. They fish the outside point, but they don't fish the point that's really small, that's 200 yards down the shoreline or whatever. That to me can be really productive on pressured waters. Wind as well too. Like, you know, fish the wind, fish safely and comfortably and fish effectively, but really windy days, a lot of times you see a lot less pressure and fish seem to bite a little better in the wind anyway. And that can be a good time to pick your poison there.
Well, that pretty much wraps up our Friday here at the Minnesota Muskie Expo. Before we head out, I want to let everybody know that we will be doing this again in Wausau next week. It'll be March 15th, 16th, and 17th. Team Rhino Outdoors will be there with 50 feet of the best stuff in the muskie industry. Of course, Brad's not going to be there because, well, Brad's just too cool to come to Wisconsin, right? He only does that once a year to go fishing with Chase, and that's it. So, Brad, I think it was a great episode as usual. I love having these guide panels. We really appreciate everybody sticking around. I know it's not always the most enjoyable thing because it's not super loud. We don't have microphones and things like that where they can hear it real well. But we want to thank all of the attendees coming out to the Minnesota Muskie Expo. I want to thank our guides for their time too tonight. And Brad, you got any last words before we get out of here?
I think you guys pretty much buttoned it up. Great time here at Minnesota. And we got two more good days of it. So looking forward to that. And hooray. My show season's over.
Yeah. Brad can just about, you know, tap the keg or however he wants to go about celebrating. I don't. I got to make a quick turnaround. We got to pack some orders from the online weekend. You know, we had our free show shipping sale this weekend. And so we got to quick make that turnaround. And then we got to reload. And based off of the way Friday went, I think there's going to be a little bit of reloading to do. So unfortunately, I won't be in that same position. But we want to thank everybody for their support of Backlash Podcast. As always, want to thank you for, you know, patronizing Muskie Mayhem Tackle and Team Rhino Outdoors throughout the course of this entire show season. And we will be back with a live episode from the Wisconsin Muskie Expo next week. So thank you.